Mike, you could start. I will just continue to admit people as they come into the meeting.
Okay, very good. All right, I'd like to call this meeting to order of the Central Connecticut Solid Waste Authority regular meeting today, Monday, September 18th, 2023 at 2 o'clock p.m. Believe we have a quorum. So what we will do is move into item number two on the agenda, public comment. This is our traditional public comment period that we have in every meeting. I would invite anyone from the public who would like to speak now, just raise your hand in the chat or in the call, I mean, and we will call on you as we see hands come up.
I don't see any hands raised or any comments that have come in.
No, neither do I. Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to item number three of our agenda, approval of the minutes of the meeting from July 17th, 2023. I believe these have been put up on the website and circulated for review. Does anyone have any comment or issues they want to discuss related to the minutes? Okay, if not, do I have a motion to accept the minutes of July 17, 2023?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second, Brett Presley.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, the meeting minutes for the July 17, 2023 meeting are accepted. Moving on to item number four, report from the chair. I'll just give a brief verbal update of what we've been working on. Last month, on August 21st, we had an executive committee meeting where we discussed some of the steps that we're starting to go through from starting at a foundational and organizational standpoint, and then moving our way to operations issues and programmatic issues as we get more into the new year. We had a discussion as well about the MOU agreement between CSWA and CROG. I believe we've reached an agreement on that. And before that document can be executed, Robin, I'm correct, it has to go to the CROG board for review and approval.
That is correct, Mike. We will be presenting that MOU as amended to the CROG Policy Board at our September meeting in about a week or so.
Okay. And then Mr. Hart will be authorized to execute that document. We spent a considerable amount of time talking about the model ordinance and the bylaws as they stand now. We are going to have a presentation today by RRS, discuss this a little bit more in depth. There's a couple of different issues that we've identified and just trying to find the best way and simplest way to move forward, not only with the member communities that we have now, but also any new communities that might be joining us in the near or medium term future. The Finance Committee is another item that that was discussed. We have that on our agenda today. There's a couple of positions on the Finance Committee. It consists of five members, two of which are kind of default members in accordance with the bylaws, but then also three open positions. We can discuss that after this report. I'm also going to be looking to set up a meeting with Department of Energy and Environmental Protection with some folks there just to talk about solid waste management and what they see the environment looking like going forward. I'll probably attend that meeting with Tom Roy, the vice chair, and Matt Hart from CROG, but I'm going to work on setting that up over the next probably the next week or two, and we'll get more information back to everybody, and then let you know what the outcome of that is at one of our next meetings this fall. And finally, I believe Robin, we finalized the 2023 meeting agenda, at least until we get to the annual meeting.
Yes. That is correct. So through the annual meeting, which will be in December, I believe, the 18th, which will be the executive committee followed by the full CSWOM membership.
All right. So, yep, at that meeting, we'll set the schedule for 2024 and then go forward from there. So that is kind of an update as to what's been going on in the last month or so. From the kind of the executive committee chair side of things. With that, I'd like to move to number five on our agenda, the finance committee nominations and approval. According to the bylaws, we, as I mentioned earlier, we have five positions, one of which must be a representative from the host committee, which at this point just consists of Hartford. Again, per the bylaws and the ordinance, and also a representative from the community with the largest MSW tonnage reporting, which is also Hartford. So in that regard, that would put me and Dave Stuber, our other Hartford rep, on the committee. My thinking is, in terms of nominating other folks for that finance committee, that it makes it's logical to have the treasurer of the organization be on that committee, and that is Russ Arnold. So he would be an individual I'd like to nominate for serving on the finance committee. I've tried to speak with a number of other individuals, and I've kind of been hit or miss in terms of getting into touch with folks and have actual conversation about this. But we do have two other slots. At least one other individual has indicated to me that they might be interested, depending upon what the time commitment is, what the framework of responsibilities would be. I don't believe that person's on the call today, so I'm a little hesitant to nominate someone if they still have outstanding questions about what exactly they would be taking on. But that being said, I would like to hear from the group in terms of, are there any other individuals or candidates that you would like to see potentially serve on the finance committee?
Mike, everybody's jumping on.
Yeah, I guess I made it sound real exciting.
Don't everyone jump on at once. Do we have any questions? Why don't we maybe, does anyone have any questions about what their role would be if they were to serve on the finance committee? I think that might be something we could address.
Yes.
Is that some hesitation there because people don't know their time and what they're going to be doing? I know we all are involved in a lot of meetings. So, I mean, Mike, would you want to discuss that briefly about what you think that role would be?
The biggest function would be adopting a proposed annual budget each fiscal year and then sending that to the executive committee for adoption. The second thing is more of a long-term item, but would potentially be quite a considerable piece of work, and that's adopting a negotiated version of any contract with a solid waste vendor in connection with a facility designated for use by the authority, and then again transmitting that proposed contract to the executive committee. Those are really the two big responsibilities of the finance committee. So right now, obviously, this organization has not constructed a MSW facility and identified an operator for that, but at some point, if that were to happen, members of the finance committee would be heavily involved in that contract negotiation. So again, I stress that that's probably more of a long-term item, and really the big piece is doing the budget every year, which at right now this year's budget will be fairly modest, and you know, as we're still a kind of a small organization and starting to grow, but going forward down the road, that would be a bigger and bigger thing to have to undertake each year. But as for now, it would not be a terribly heavy lift, I don't think. So that is what's laid out as the real meat and potatoes of the duties for the Finance Committee.
Does this tweak anybody's interest?
I think Tim's got his hand up.
Wonderful. Tim. Do you have a question, Tim?
I think Tim might be.
Sorry, there we go. There we go. Sorry about that. Question is, this Finance Committee, is this going to be just a short-term committee until we have the annual meeting and then we'll have a new Finance Committee? We're looking to bridge the gap, or is this a standing beyond the annual meeting?
Let's see. I would think at this point, there isn't a set term for members on the Finance Committee, okay, which is the thing I was double checking. Mm-hmm. So we could have this be just a sort of an interim version of it until we get to December, and that may give folks more time to think about if this is something they want to make a potentially longer term commitment to. But over the next, unbelievably, we only got a little over 3 months left in the year. So really the Finance Committee's job this fall would be putting together a relatively modest budget. I think we could certainly revisit membership when we get to the annual meeting.
I'll throw my hat in the ring if anyone's for the good of the group.
Thanks, Tim.
Yes, thank you. So we got Tim and Russ.
If there was anyone else that may want to reach out individually, if they had any other questions, we would honestly like to have a fifth member here so we could start moving forward with some of the initial discussions. You will actually have CROG administrative support as well. I work with CSWA as far as, membership dues and all those types of administrative services. You would not be bogged down in those type of daily task. You're going to be looking at the overall higher level picture on where we're going to be moving forward with CSWA.
All right. So I think what we could do, Robin, is nominate the two gentlemen, Tim and Russ, for today, and
correct,
move on their nominations.
Yes.
And we could discuss this further about a fifth member at the executive committee meeting next month, and perhaps get a little more time for folks to consider. It's certainly something we can do.
Okay. I agree. If you want to move forward with that, then today, Mike.
Okay. All right. Do I have an, let's see. Do I have a motion to nominate Tim Bacchus and Russ Arnold to the Finance Committee of CSWA?
So moved, Jim Rupert.
Second, Tom Roy.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Russ. Look forward to serving with you. And we'll just make a note, Robin, for the executive committee agenda for next month, that we put that discussion of fifth member on the agenda. Okay, moving on to item number 6, RRS presentation regarding CSWA bylaws, concurrent ordinance, and best practices. Robin, would you like to introduce our consultant for us?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mike. If I have feedback, I am not going to do the introductions.
Well, maybe if Jim could just mute, and then when he speaks, obviously we'll do the same.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you again for the time today, everyone at on the committee. I want to introduce Jim Fry from RRS. He is an expert in his in the waste management, recycling infrastructure, and other means related to waste management. He is going to discuss with us their experience with working with organizations such as ours with putting together a model ordinance and bylaws. We're going to do a real high-level overview of the current bylaws and ordinance that we have right now, and we are actually going to look at maybe what we could move forward with as far as best practices as an organization. So with that, I'm going to leave it and turn it over to Jim Fry. I can advance slides as needed, Jim.
Great, Robin, thank you. And how is my sound? I'm not getting any feedback, which is good. Awesome. Excellent. And Robin, you're queuing up the slides? Great. So while that takes place, a few moments of just introduction. My background comes as CEO and founder of Resource Recycling Systems, and we're one of the kind of a very much a boutique consultancy that is focused solely on waste management, recycling, diversion, both public sector and private sector. And essentially, in modern terms, corporate America is calling this the means of a circular economy. And so we come to the mission of waste management knowing all of the tools that are part of the public sector working together to advance programming, to safely dispose of the material that has to be disposed, but also to move into the kinds of organizational mechanisms, governance structures, financing approaches, and programmatic and service approaches that result in good quality diversion and successful diversion programs. And as was kind of implied, we did work together with the CROG team in an earlier assessment of the CROG situation and the CROG community opportunity. And that is what led to this recommendation to activate CSWA and take it a step forward. And so, for lack of a better word, behind me, figuratively, is the team of both RRS as well as Tetra Tech. And keep in mind that those resources are available and have been essentially brought to bear already with some of the recommendations. And so what we wanted to do today, if you advance to the next slide, Robin, is essentially in the early stages of how CSWA is mobilizing, given that you have essentially a legacy structure from the past, it seemed very pertinent and it also appears to be important to activating this next stage to both look at what you already have in place and then compare it to a little bit of best practices locally. And then also to set the stage for discussions on what might be possible in terms of additional advances in how your bylaws and your authorizing ordinance are structured. We do this kind of work for a variety of solid waste authorities and also public works entities that are set up as intergovernmental service providers, what we often refer to as a hub and spoke arrangement, where surrounding counties or surrounding cities are co-managing and co-running a program that's typically structured under an authority type arrangement with multiple units of government. So that's what I bring is strong background in that. I am not an attorney. However, I have written bylaws, I have written ordinances, and we usually typically work very closely with legal counsel and other legal resources to advance solutions and get them to where they need to be to meet your needs. And I think that's, before I jump into kind of walking through the slides, my observation about what is going to be most pertinent for you today is to have a discussion that helps direct your executive committee and your leadership on what changes, if any, do you want to see in your bylaws and in your ordinance that essentially are leaning into the next phase of your development and operations as CSWA? And I'll do that with a caveat that simple is always better. And in the spirit of that, I'll transition to describing your current bylaws with an introduction that says there's not a lot in here other than the sort of organizational and governance details, which are all good. And I think some of the issues you might want to confront is whether we might be able to further simplify that. But as we then go look at another example and also discuss what might be possible going forward, you have a similar, for lack of a better word, point of view that you need to develop as an organization as to what do you want in your bylaws and authorizing ordinance and what is appropriate for later addition. And so with that, I'm going to, in this slide, what we've done is take your bylaws and just summarize it as in its major components. And obviously, each one of these has a lot of depth. And however, we've chosen just a few of those to dig into that we think get at the areas that are more substantive for you. And just so you're all familiar, the Article 1 authorizes the creation and purpose of the authority, along with supporting elements of that. And this is the first area where the purpose gets outlined to jointly manage solid waste disposal and recycling services and related activities on behalf of its municipal members. A pretty basic statement, pretty straightforward, no further definition or scope. It's worth noting, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, that in your authorizing resolution, there's a little bit more detail that's kind of speaks to some of the implied direction. But as an overall statement of purpose, you know, this is fine. It also is something that could be expanded if it was felt that it would be beneficial in attracting additional members or in further clarifying what you as current members are all comfortable with as an overall purpose. The second article is, again, you know, the blocking and tackling of these kind of organizations, and that's the decisions requiring member action to both join and then withdraw. And it's worth noting that joining and withdrawing in the current environment of CSWA is relatively simple. It does become a more complex animal when there are ongoing programming, when there have been past investments, when there's assets or other complexities that would affect especially withdrawal. But it does happen, and we've had some experience with helping facilitate withdrawal in some cases from solid waste authorities. Third, we start to get into some of the more substantive, and we have a slide that dives into this further, but Article 3 is where we get into membership, member representation, authority meetings, lots of detail there. Article 4, adoption and amendment of the bylaws, again, important details, especially as the organization grows. Executive committee and other authority committees. You just had a small example of how important the role of your finance committee is and how to staff it and how to member it and how it then executes. But it's worth saying that we'll dive deeper into this as well, and noting that here the importance that I would stress on is the powers and roles of the executive committee and just how important those are for continuity and ongoing efficient operation of an authority. The next one, Article 6, gets again into some of the blocking and tackling, the election of officers, their responsibilities, very specifically described. Article 7, finances. Article 8, the always important indemnification. And then again, from a member point of view, Attachment A is the actual member ordinance, sort of the second document in the twin documents for your organization. With that, I'll ask to advance the slide and we'll dive deeper into Article 3. And I think one of the reasons why there's a benefit to focusing on this has to do with the complexity. And your current Article 3 is complex in the sense that it has a number of, for lack of a better word, layers of weighted factoring that help determine votes. These tiers that are mentioned get into population, get into sort of an annual cycle of affirming that because it affects voting quantity and voting power, essentially. And it also then sets the stage in doing that for all the usual elements of where voting especially is important in terms of filling executive seats, electing officers, adopting a budget, and even enacting other business and it, you know, in your case, future programs and services. It's also worth noting that, again, all the basics are there about quorum and valid and binding actions that need affirmative vote of the majority of members, notice requirements, which can be important as you begin to consider financial aspects or program and service direction and recommendations. But I think that we wanted to highlight this Article 3 for the complexity of the voting system and whether in your current position there's any desire or interest in entertaining any variation on that, in which case, as I've mentioned, it would be something that you would want your executive committee to explore further. Unless there's any questions on that, we'll move to the next slide. And then this one gets into, as I was mentioning before, Article 5, a deeper dive on the committees, but especially the executive committee. And as you then, if you spend some time in that article, you can see that its roles and responsibilities, essentially what it is both capable of and authorized and enabled to do, is fairly extensive. And when you have a minimal amount of programming, not too much of a concern. But when you do advance to a much more developed set of program and services, the possibility of assets, the possibilities of employees, a wide variety of matters begin to become executive committee territory, contracts, spending authorization, employee issues, the actual development of program recommendations and bringing them to the board, the development and growth of the might think about simply as your strategic direction often comes from the executive committee and the leadership of the organization. And again, this is what you have in front of you. And these roles and practices of the executive committee would emerge over time. But the bylaws as currently written are, probably in some sense a representative best practice in that oftentimes that smaller group is much more able to keep the momentum going and the direction going and then orchestrate or facilitate the input of the whole membership in actual significant actions that require full CSWA membership actions. So you can see in this list, very specific elements of the reps, and you actually had some discussion of this already, the elected voting, the voting tiers, the representatives from the municipality with the most tonnage, the one with the recycling that represents recycling programs. You have the some limitations on number of executive committee to make sure that there's not a, for lack of a better word, duplication in a role. So we have fair distribution of executive committee powers. You have the traditional staggering of terms and also representing and being clear on at the executive committee level, this is not a weighted system. This is a one representative, one vote structure. And in fact, that's one of the reasons that the executive committee can be so, for lack of a better word, effective and collaborative, is it's more of a peer structure in that sense. So if you want to go to the next slide, we get talk a little bit about, as I was mentioning, those powers and responsibilities. And again, this is quite a simple list that in its detail in a more advanced organization becomes quite complex. But we have the budget process, reports that are part of that, obviously working with finance committee and then reporting out to the full board, the annual audit. appointment of committees and committee members, you know, because the organization CSWI has the ability to have a number of different committees. And in fact, in some of the recommendations that came from the CROG study, there were a number of, for lack of a better word, working committees or task forces that were suggested. And it would be the executive committee that would be responsible for deciding how and whether and how to activate those kinds of things. We talked about receiving, holding, and dispersing funds and all the procedures and rules and accountability that goes along with that. Employment and management of staff. And I think a key element here is management of staff. And so essentially you would turn to your executive committee for all of those employment and staff issues. And then obviously the executive committee can also be authorized by the full membership to take action. In other words, on a particular item, the motion by the full membership would be to and hereby authorize the executive committee to take the following actions: to prepare XYZ for signature or to solicit XYZ proposals, those types of things. Those are just examples of how the membership would then give direction to both staff, if there are staff, but also to the executive committee to execute. We've talked a little bit already about the finance committee, which you've now established as a subcommittee of the executive committee. So worth noting that tiered structure. Finance committee would report to the executive committee. Executive committee would report out to the full board. It doesn't mean the finance committee couldn't be called on, you know, in a board meeting to provide a, you know, report and content, but formally the role is through the executive committee. We also talk explicitly about or your bylaws talk about the role that possibly the host municipality committee may play in the operations of the and future mission of CSWA, and how that then impacts some of your plans should you have a position in the have an asset that's in a one of your member communities. And then as the last bullet says, we talked a little bit already about the authority to create other subcommittees. Article 6 is all the details that go along with the officers and their responsibilities. And again, when you think about these officers and their role in the executive committee and their role in overseeing the organization, I think that's kind of what you want to keep in mind. I don't think any of you that are in government will be too surprised with any of these descriptions. They're fairly standard for any municipality that would have committees, and I'm sure many of you work with those kind of committees. Some of the rules that are worth noting are some of the items about how removal would take place, and how that's where the officer is accountable to the full membership, and also that, however, the executive committee does have some power to intervene with an officer and act at the executive committee level to deal with vacancies, to deal with removal, and then orchestrate that with a more formal appointment process at the full committee level. So again, not really any surprises, although if you dig into some of the details, there might be some tweaks you want to make. We go to the next slide. And then Article 7, dealing with finances. Some of the things worth mentioned here, and you've already talked a little bit about how your upcoming budget needs to be developed. That obviously has a direct implication on the financial status, your balance sheet, your available funds, and then also what you would be setting up in the way of dues or fees as part of the programming for the year. And there are some very specific elements worth noting that those dues and fees must be paid. We talked a little bit about the complexity, not only in voting, but in the tiered structure around payment that is worthy of consideration. And then, however, there is a very specific connection to non-payment and loss of voting rights. So in some sense, you know, it's like a house of cards. If you don't pay, you know, your role in that organization begins to implode. And then just a few ethics and, you know, clarity of, you know, not paid for these services, your member organizations take care of that. And I think the last bullet is one that is worth just reminding people. And this is often the one of, in my experience, two key reasons that authorities are created. And one is to develop a coordinated programming and run that programming and share costs for that programming. But a second one that isn't always used is that it is a actual authorized entity to incur debt, to take on loans, to take on that kind of CapEx spending. However, that can only occur with vote and approval of each member community. And that often is where, as we'll see in this next example, that's where a little bit more complexity comes into play. So then we move to the ordinance, which is attached as Exhibit A, and it's what each of your member communities have passed, in this case, years and years ago. And again, it's not really that complicated. And what I noted in my key features are, one, there's a repeat of the purpose statement, but it's slightly expanded. And here it says explicitly to solicit and jointly manage recycling and solid waste services. And I think the key phrase here is solicit. And so, you know, even though that's implied in the earlier statement, I think it's worth noting here that it is one of the joint activities that is at least originally was considered, is the soliciting of those proposals for those services for recycling and solid waste management. The second bullet I think is of note is the designation of CSWA as the as your community's regional waste authority has limits. And that's, I describe those limits are the conditional elements. And this is where much of the nitty gritty of operating a authority comes into play, committing your tons, committing your waste, committing your recyclables, committing to a certain set of services that have cost implications. And the conditional aspects of this are that your ordinance is very clear that just because you've adopted this ordinance does not mean you've signed on to those other programmatic decisions. And thus, CSWA in the future, if it were to jointly procure some services or a long-term relationship with a facility, those would all be done with a repeat of the voting provisions of each member community. And so that's why I call this designation a conditional designation. The local ordinance then takes all the steps to affirm all the other elements of the bylaw provisions, essentially helping everybody understand that even though it's not said in here, everything that's said in the bylaws is applicable to this authorizing resolution at the local level. Similarly, any changes in the bylaws go back to authorizing changes in the ordinance. And that's just, you think, consider that as part of your due diligence and governance process. And then lastly of note, sort of my commentary, as we will take a brief pause and then we'll segue into some other examples or other ways your bylaws and ordinance could be improved. And that is that your ordinance is silent on any programmatic provisions that are typical of active authorities and model ordinances, where the programming component, the service component, the programming component is much better defined. It's understood because they've gone through that, you know, growth phase, that maturation phase that develops into actual programs. And we've just given some examples of that, where there are, some have diversion commitments, minimum program standards, reference to specific initiatives that everybody is signing on to as part of their commitment in their membership in the organization, sharing of some disposal bans and other local provisions that enable the authority to essentially be an aggregator of local ordinances. Those are just a few examples of what you see either in the representative ordinance that is part of joining the organization or in later amendments. So one of your local examples you have before we do that, just briefly ask, is there any questions or comments others might want to make? I don't represent that I'm the expert. I know you have a lot of expertise right there in the room.
I don't see any hands raised. Oh, Matt has his hands raised.
Yes, Matt.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Jim. Jim, one thing we've noted in the past, and I believe you had reviewed this with Robin and with me back when we were helping to get C-Squaw up and running again, is that weighted voting is more common with authorities that actually own infrastructure. Is that accurate, and does that still hold true?
Correct, and thanks for bringing that up, because our experience, as Matt highlighted, is that when a major commitment of actual physical infrastructure, which typically means taking on debt in some way, shape, or form, that's one of the primary reasons that you would typically see a more complex voting structure. Essentially, you know, those that are bigger and have more tons, you know, for lack of a better word, have more say and also have more liability and risk in taking on a capex, a bond, et cetera. Whereas oftentimes, if it's a simpler agreement for services, where for like, you know, say in a public-private partnership, where the private partner is taking on the debt, oftentimes just your user fee mechanism, which is already tonnage based, gives all the, for lack of a better word, passage of responsibility onto a larger member versus a smaller member. And so that is often where you get a more equalizing effect on a procurement that's really simply a service procurement, where each member is already weighing the impact of that based on the check they're going to write to pay for tip fees at a facility or at a recycling program, not whether they're taking on long-term debt and all the implications that go along with that. Is that helpful in terms of covering what you wanted to have covered, Matt?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Perfect. Any other questions? And if not, I'll use that as a segue, actually, to highlight, you know, the Housatonic Resources Recovery Authority, HRRA, which there's no question that is a model for you because it's successful, it's stable, it is sustainable, it has funding mechanisms in place, it has staff, it has facilities, even though, you know, some authorities don't need to have facilities, but they've made those choices. And they have, as a result, over the years of their operation, all of the kinds of systems, governance, funding, finance, management, programmatic service capabilities that allow them to meet the needs of their member communities. And we know from, even though we're not directly involved with HRRA, we know from our involvement, ongoing involvement with a number of authorities, that what happens is the local communities have a tremendous burden lift off of them, especially with a well-run authority, for providing top-shelf programming. And in my lens, that top-shelf programming, and it's consistent with what we've recommended to you, is programming that really helps your community and the region achieve diversion goals, reduce needs for disposal capacity, improve the economic benefits that come from diversion and recovery, both on the organic side, on the recycling side, and also explore many other aspects, whether they are ancillary services like household hazardous waste, e-scrap, collection and processing of bulky materials, some of the economic development things that happen with good waste management programs, or beneficial services that are more affordable, I guess is the best way to say it, more affordable because they're done jointly through a larger group. And a great example of that is outreach and education, where, you know, sharing those costs, sharing the engagement with your residents, with your businesses, is so much easier when it's handled by a small team of professionals covering any, you know, we've seen them cover as many as 70 or 80 communities and really do it well. We've seen contracting managed by a single authority covering 15 to 20 to 30 communities and a half a million to a million households. So, you know, these things you're stepping into in your scale are represented well by this example you have of HRRA. And a couple of things worth noted is obviously they're taking their ordinances and bylaws and then advancing them with their operating budget, some of their methods, hauler registration, permits, recycling program fees, the grants that they've structured. And then you can see a little bit in the storyboard box at the bottom, a little bit about the funding mechanisms that they've set in place. And one of the things that's worth noting, and you all know this, you're in the business, so to speak, and we do this with a lot of communities we work with where residents don't understand that small service they get at the curb for a couple hundred dollars, when you add that up over one or more communities, is millions and millions and millions of dollars. And when you add that up over multiple years, you're talking about some serious money that is able to be done well, be done professionally. And however, raising those funds is something that a good authority will help each member community do. And that's an example where the HRRA has really tackled that with their, you know, their per ton fee on MSW at the transfer station, the per ton fee on recyclables, the recycling program fee, the hauler permit fee, the ability to solicit successfully grants, which, you know, hopefully you're going to have some success here shortly with. Beneficial, obviously, in your case, the state wants to see CSWA grow and exceed, succeed. And then also the ability in that last bullet to have wet methods, and sometimes they're innovative methods on a per service event basis, but allow your community, each of your communities, to, for lack of a better word, buy some of the menu items on the authority service package. So we took this this list and also RRS's experience with other authorities, if you advance to the next slide, to basically identify a few takeaways from our experience for your bylaws and ordinance. And this is what we really would propose as a starting point for dialogue, certainly for any discussion you would want to have here, but also to, for lack of a better word, request that your executive committee further develop. And the first is the justification. I've mentioned that in terms of the purpose, but also, and HRA has this, there's a little more why we're doing this in the whereases. One of the things we find beneficial is people need to be reminded what it used to be like and why we did this in the first place. And it's odd how when you lack that, that story sometimes gets forgotten. And in the few cases where we've seen somebody leave an authority, it actually is something that would have been good to remind everybody, because there's also a rinse and repeat that happens. You know, the same problems emerge. And so that there are a few whereases that could be introduced into your both your bylaws and your ordinance. And again, it can both document shortcomings of your current practices, your current situation. And obviously, that's a big part of why everybody's been talking. But it also can outline in some way your aspirational goals. And again, we still keep to that principle of keep it simple. You don't want to, for lack of a better word, impinge on your ability to act with something too specific. But it also is beneficial to highlight those aspirational goals. We talked a little bit about a simplified affirmation of bylaw provisions. And this could actually be a way to address some of those areas where we've looked at the bylaws, you know, those are a little complex, like the one we just talked with Matt about, you know, sort of the representation model. And that actually could be thought through a little bit more and some change language proposed. And your authorizing ordinance could have a affirmation of that with enough of the reason why that it actually connects the two very specifically. Like, we're a member of this authority because we're all working on this together, and we're coming forward together with our peer communities. to implement programming and services, et cetera. The next bullet is really the one where there's a direct link to much of what we have discussed in the past, some of what we recommended in the CROG analysis and assessment, and that would be layering in some additional programmatic scope beyond the basic purpose. We've talked a little bit about, you know, there are some authorities that we work with who were very explicit that they had no intention of owning certain kind of assets. And they were really explicit about that in the beginning. Some were also quite explicit in terms of their approach to public-private partnerships with a strong commitment to having the risks and the burden of debt held by private partners, not by the public agencies, have some of the financing set up in such a way that it de-risks the public sector side and place that risk on the private sector side. These are things that could be. I wouldn't necessarily assume they are part of where you're coming from, but they're important things to think about in terms of your strategic approach to your development in the future. The third bullet, sub-bullet there is also, we think, very important. We find that if there is some both benchmarking of where you're at right now, which is a very beneficial result of the report that's just been done, but then also, what is that aspirational goal? It's really, really valuable when you get to authorizing later on programming to say that, you know, recommendation X that all the member communities are ready to move forward on is consistent with the bylaws and the authorizing ordinance that, you know, your community, you as decision makers in your community adopted, you know, whether it's a goal for X level of diversion or a particular approach to facility development or disposal practice or waste reduction for that matter. And then lastly in that area is the financial parameters for programs and services. We sometimes, again, see some boundaries put in there from a best practice point of view. And why that may be a useful exercise at the beginning is you certainly don't want to surprise members later on with a type of financial risk request that just is a non-starter for your community when that could have been discussed and possibly have enough definition right at the beginning in your bylaws and your authorizing amendment that everybody's really comfortable that if something comes forward as a financing mechanism, it's the kind of thing we've all thought was possible and our board is ready to consider it. And lastly, and this one I actually personally think is extremely important, is to define some authorizing mechanism for development of authority-sponsored services. It's implied in all the typical things that an organization does. You do a strategic plan, you develop your budget, but it is funny how when you get into the day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year, and somebody is beginning to think about a new programming area and they really want to, you know, get that commercial food waste system going, and nobody really ever puts together the little roadmap of, okay, well, that means this, 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 and this, and what's next? And oftentimes you can have a mechanism defined that, you know, would, you know, at least allow a member community who's not on the executive committee, who maybe isn't that large, but just have a way to propose something because it's consistent with the clause that says a new service is proposed for consideration through the following mechanism. So just a little bit elaborate there. So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that's my last slide. And I would only go that that in my view, as I was saying at the beginning, we would see that this is the kind of thing the executive committee would take into consideration and bring back to you in terms of their suggestions. So thank you. I'm sorry I went on so long. But if there are any questions, I'm available.
I know we're at time right now, but I'd like to. Tim, if I can have you.
Oh, sure.
Just one second. I know we're at time right now, but I know that there might be some very important questions. If anyone has, they'd like to raise their hand right now while we have Jim on and bring it in front of the full committee right now. Does anyone have any questions they'd like to ask? Right, you can put it in the chat or raise your hand. Okay. I don't see any coming in, Mike, at this point in time. I guess I'll defer back over to Mike Looney and for next steps here.
Okay. Thank you, Jim, for the presentation. We're on item seven now on our agenda, CROG staff reports. Do we have anything, Robin? Anything new to add?
I'm going to make it really fast on here. So if you see, we did submit the request for additional information to CTD for the Regional Waste Authority. We're waiting for an update. The MOU we briefly discussed, the amended version and approved, is going to be presented to our policy board on September 27th. Mm-hmm. We do have two towns that have remaining dues payments due, which I'm following up on those. There are some funding opportunities that are out there, which I don't know that we have a lot of time to get into that, but one of them being available under the bottle bill right now are for the possibility of a municipality or a regional option to develop a bottle redemption center. That is something else. If any municipality on here is interested in that, we can discuss this as a possible option here outside of CSWA. I can send you that information as well, too. I also want to just give us our next meeting update. The next meeting will be of the executive committee. It'll be on October 16th. Our annual meeting, which is the full CSWA, will be December 18th, and all of those invitations have been sent out. Additional materials I will provide if you prior to the meeting.
All right, very good. Item number eight on our agenda, CSWA next steps. As Robin mentioned, we have an executive committee meeting coming up on October 16th. Two things I'd ask for folks to start working on and are putting together your own personal comments or suggested edits to the bylaws or the model ordinance. Would be great if we could start collecting that information, see where people stand and what ideas they have about what these should ultimately look like over the course of this fall. So if at all possible, if you could get those to Robin before October 16th, so that we could possibly take a look at them on as part of our agenda for the executive committee meeting in October. I would love to start diving into that in light of Jim's presentation today. And also market testing opportunities, different programs. I'd also like folks to start putting together their ideas about maybe some low-hanging fruit that we might be able to go after in terms of programmatic market testing initiatives. If it's something related to textiles or things of things like that, we'd love to hear about those too. And perhaps that's probably going to be an item of discussion for our annual meeting coming up in December as to what can we possibly start moving forward on as we get out of the foundational organizational part of the process here. So I would be very interested to hear folks' thoughts on that as well. And of course, at any time, you can email me any ideas that you have, any suggestions. Be happy to look at them and discuss them or send them directly to Robin. That's all I have for CSWA next steps. If there isn't any other business, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn, Tim Bacchus, Manchester.
Second, Tom Roy, Simsbury.
Okay, that will stand adjourned. And thank you, everyone. We will be in communication as we go through the rest of the fall.
Take care, everybody.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you all for your time. Bye-bye.
Take care. Thank you.